Todd and I were out at Kansas City at the National Associations of Farm Broadcasters Convention, where we're both in the membership, and they do a trade show every year. And we went to the trade show that day because it's a great source of story information for a lot of the things that we were able to put on the radio in terms of our feature reporting. And we had worked with Joe from time to time before. He's appeared on Commodity Week, that show that's at 11:30 on Saturday morning, Central Time, that is. And lo and behold, we walked by there, and there he was, Joe Persaki in the flesh in Kansas City. You too. You too is what he said. And so we got to talking about this and that, and I said, you know, Joe, you got a beautiful travel budget because he's with the federal government, and it would be just grand for him to do a presentation out at our all-day Agriculture Outlook meeting. He said, well, can I give him 1,000 producers? No, he didn't say that many. But how many were going to be there, he said. And I said, oh, a whole bunch of people are going to be there. He said, well, then I'm in. Count me in, he said. So it's my pleasure to introduce Joe Persaki, who is the chief of the crops branch of the National Agricultural Statistics Service. That's row crops. And all field crops. He does oranges, too, You probably don't care about that. And he's going to talk a little bit about the March 31st upcoming planning intentions report. He's got some other things for you. And then, now you're a Saluki?
Yes.
Yeah. and I don't know if you know this, but a certain head coach of a certain team that's 29-1, well, he was a Saluki. Is that right?
He sure was.
And then before that, he was a Indiana boy.
He was at Purdue.
At Purdue, that's right. Yeah. So Joe not only is going to talk about some interesting things that you need to know about planting intentions and statistics.
Maybe a little basketball.
But he's going to talk a little hoops, too. Sure. Joe Persaki, give him a hand, please.
Thanks. Good morning, folks. I'm glad to be here. I relish the opportunity. Actually, I am from Illinois. I grew up in a little town just south here called DuQuoin. Anybody know where that is? It's way down. Oh, yeah, you know where it is. Okay. I'm going to tell you something. I worked in Indiana at our NAS office up in Purdue, and one thing that struck me was the black dirt that was up in central Indiana, northern Indiana. When I was a kid growing up, down in southern Illinois, this is the color of the dirt in the summertime, right here. And if you can scratch out 135 bushels of corn on that last year, something was right. Something was right last year. As Dave mentioned, I am a Saluki grad, and I am also a Purdue grad. So I'm a two-for-one. I have torn conflicts. Today what I want to talk about is just a few things. I want to do an overview of NAS, and I have to do that because I am here from the federal government, and I'm here to help you. Okay, I have to do this. Also, I'm going to do a little bit of review of 2004. This is one that you should put down in your record books. My uncle's pushing 80. And he told his renter, Larry, who I went to high school with, he said, Larry, write this down in your books. You'll never see a year like this again. He said, mine was 1994. That was the last year he farmed. So he said, put it in your books. I'm going to talk about some influencing factors for 2005. And then I'm going to talk about our March agricultural survey that it gives us the root information for our prospective plantings and grain stocks reports. And then if we have time, we have some questions and answers. Before I get started, I want to introduce a couple people because there's a group of people, I think, from Illinois here, right? Yes. And there's a group of people from Indiana, right? And which has the best basketball? Wherever you live, right? Okay. We have the state directors for NAS. From our Springfield office, we have Mr. Brad Schwab. He's the director of our NAS office up in Springfield, Illinois. And we have Mr. Greg Preston, who is our director of our Indiana office up in West Lafayette. And also somewhere around here is Susan Reynolds, who is helping out with some of the activities with our booth. There's plenty of information here. NAS's mission is to provide timely, accurate, and useful service to United States agriculture. Sometimes I guess you guys probably think, well, what are those guys in D.C. doing? Well, you know what? I'm one of those guys in D.C., and I still think sometimes the people in D.C. are crazy. So just bear with me as we go through this. I want to talk a little bit about how we're structured. A couple interesting things to think about here is, you know, you think about a bunch of stodgy bureaucrats, but the guy at the top, Mr. R. Ron Bosecker, Administrator of the National Agricultural Statistics Service, sounds like an important title. Where's Mount Carmel, Illinois? Just across the border? Ron's from Mount Carmel. He's a good guy. His dad and uncle still farm over there. He's all right. He's a Saluki grad. The guy over here, Mr. Steve Wyatt, let me see if I can find him on here. I don't know. He's over here someplace. Mr. Steve Wyatt, who's my boss, who is the director of Statistics Division, is from Newton, Illinois. Where's that? That's just right over here, too. Well, they can't be too bad. They're like your friends and neighbors, right? He raised cattle over there. His family, they still have the farm, but they sold the cattle. But we're good people. We just happen to work in Washington, D.C. I just want to structure. We have NAS field offices in virtually every state in the union. It's two color coded because we have what's called western states and our eastern states in our structure. And it's interesting, we have an office down in Puerto Rico. We have a little office down there. They raise little bit of coffee and a little bit of citrus, not much. We have an office up in Alaska and one in Hawaii. You think it's a sweet deal to go to Hawaii to work? I don't know, the cost of living is just outrageous. If you think D.C. is high, Hawaii is even higher. The only state up in New England, we have one office up there for all six of those New England states. You know, the thing that always gets me, I always pick on New England. I look at Vermont and New Hampshire, and it looks like it's the same state with me. You know, to me, it's just a river between them, but I don't know. It's a pretty good deal. But we have an office in virtually every single state. What does NAS do? We administer our USDA's statistical estimation program. Basically, every statistic that comes out of the Department of Agriculture comes from NAS. I said basically. Not all of them, but most every one of them. And also, we do the five-year census. How many people get that thing in the mail that says, mandatory, required by law, send it in? Yeah, well, that's us. Okay. I'm a face. Look at me, okay? We also coordinate our federal and state agricultural statistics needs. That's what Greg and Brad do. They work with their state cooperatives, with the people in Springfield and the people in Indianapolis and up at Purdue University to coordinate things. We also consult with other federal agencies and private organizations and other countries. Okay, you say, why should the United States share statistical expertise with other countries? Well, just last week we did have a group of Brazilians in. You say, oh, our big competitors. Okay, these gentlemen up here talked about soybean numbers that are constantly changing, right? Who knows what the right number of soybeans is in Brazil? Nobody knows. Well, the thing is, if we can impress upon the Brazilians what the importance of having a sound statistical program, it helps everybody. It helps the markets. Because with things bouncing around all over the place, who knows what the right level is? And also, we do statistical research. We do projects with objective yield and sort of things like that, and I'll get to that in a little bit. A couple other things about NAS. We're non-policy making. We don't participate in the writing of the farm bill. We don't participate in any sort of the farm program. We are there to collect statistics. We're non-political. Mr. Bosecker, that I mentioned, who's our administrator, started out in the field office and worked his way up to the administrator. We have no political appointees in our agency. We have about 1,100 people in our agency, and that includes most of the people out in the field offices, out in your areas. Because other states besides just Illinois and Indiana. There's about 300 people in Washington. We're unbiased in appraisers of U.S. agriculture. When the Secretary of Agriculture comes over and signs the reports for our releases, the Secretary signs the report before we tell them what's in the report. Because if they don't sign it, we're still going to put it out. We're going to put it out anyhow. We're independent and objective. Now for basketball a little bit. Okay, here. You're saying, why do you have some graphs on basketball and it looks like things going like this? Hey, you know what, folks? These are statistics, okay? Statistics just like agricultural statistics. The orange line represents the U of I basketball winning percentages since 1990. The maroon, obviously the color of SIU, goes along since 1990, and the black is Purdue. That looks kind of interesting going up. Notice, hey, Purdue, I was a Purdue grad, we had some good years in the mid-90s. We were dominating, okay? Go Purdue. Hey, look, SIU, they've been pretty good here. They wanted the regular season. They can't win the tournament, but they can win the regular season. And go figure that out. And then we got U of I, they've won these years. Now, something's kind of interesting to me. Well, Bruce Weber's first year at SIU was there, right? Okay, Purdue was doing pretty good back there, and then he went to SIU, right? Bruce Weber's first year at U of I was here. I don't know. Looks like Purdue, something's going on there. As a statistician, I just tell you, here's what it is. You tell me what's going on. I don't know. There's something, there seems to be some sort of causation factor going on there, isn't there? Yeah, okay, all right. That's the basketball. Just giggle, right? Okay, review of 2004. You probably are sick and tired of about 2004 by now. We might as well talk about it because it was like that shiny new car that you got one time, a long time ago, and you still talk about it, right? My uncle talks about his 1956 Chevrolet. It was the best car he ever owned. Bought a 58 and was no good, so he still talks about that. So we're going to be talking about 2004. U.S. producers, that's you guys, 11.8 billion bushels of corn. 160.4 bushels per acre. Crazy. Crazy numbers. Those were record highs. Not even close. Dominated over the previous time frame. Look at this graph. This one shows yields over time. Look at that, 164. We weren't even close to last year. And last year was a record. Look at this graph. This is why there was so much corn. Don't go back to the election. That doesn't have anything to do with that. But these states colored in blue, I was pointed out when I was briefing to the secretary, don't talk about red states and blue states. Talk about states colored in blue. Sorry about that. The states colored in blue, those are states with record high yields. And how much above the record they were. A lot of states, they were huge. The maroon states are states that were close, but they weren't record yields. And the red states, those were states that weren't even anywhere near. Louisiana had a little bit of the hurricane problem, and it was a little dry down there, actually. It had a hurricane, and it was dry. And then North Dakota got a little bit cold on them. But great weather everywhere. Any bug problems? No bug problems. Weather was great. Now, let's talk a little statistics. I don't know if you guys can see this graphic here. This is some of the stuff that we use when we're working on our corn yield estimates. Down on the bottom here, we can find a highlighter of some sort here. Down on the bottom here, this is ears per acre, and on this is our pounds per acre. This is the what we call fruit weight when we're talking internally. Look at this over here. We were out here in August forecasting for the remainder of the year, way out here in a land we've never seen with 27,000 ears per acre. And look at the weight, huge weights. And as the year went on, kept going up. And you're saying, well, how can you do that? Well, it's because when we do our statistical modeling, if you count the number of plants, you only expect so many to survive to the rest of the season. Well, plants kept surviving this time. We didn't lose any. This is what caused this humongous yield where we're out here at the end of the chart where we have both huge ears per acre and huge pounds per acre. In fact, it was such a good year in corn that Iowa was a tourist destination for the first time in their history. Ski Iowa. It's almost as exciting as skiing Nebraska. Actually, I was in Texas at the Commodity Classic. Somebody missed the Commodity Classic, and we had a Bulgarian taxi driver. He was talking about how he liked to go skiing. I was playing a little bit. I said, you ought to go to Nebraska. You can find some good skiing up there. He was kind of wise to me. He says, you mean cross-country skiing, don't you? I said, yeah, I do. Soybeans. Let's turn our attention to soybeans. Same kind of story. We had 3.14 billion bushels produced, 42.5 bushels per acre on yield. Those are both record highs on yield production and acreage, planted and harvested. Were all records last year. Maybe there was something that caused bean prices to go down after the first part of the year. I don't know. Look at this graphic here. One thing that beans are different than corn in many ways, but the genetics are not the same, just in the way we're doing biotech, you know, in the industry. The beans are not responding like corn is. Corn is just taking off. All right? But we are well above the yield trend at this 42.5 bushels per acre this time. Looking at this graphic, this is similar to the one on corn, showing the record yields, and this was across the Midwest. It was this you know, if you're up in North and South Dakota, this is a banana belt to you. But this right in here, beautiful weather, fantastic. This next slide, this is one similar to the corn. Now, this is the one that caused me some disconcertation when we were setting and working on the corn or soybean numbers going in October. Actually, we were sitting here, this is pods per 18 square feet, because when we lay out our objective yield plots, we count the number of beans and plants. We have an 18 square foot section that we work with, and this is our fruit weight on this axis here. We started out here in August with this forecast for our pods per acre and our bean weight. If you remember, what was the weather like coming out of August going into September? Cool, wet, right? There were newspaper reports talking about, the bean crop's not going to make it, right? Actually, our models picked that up. We picked up a decline in both plants and pod weight. And if you remember back, the USDA NAS, we forecast yield to actually go down from August into September. Then when October came around, does anybody remember what last September was like? Warm? It was, in many places in the country, the warmest September on record. It was sort of like we were back a month, talk about weather. When I saw some of these numbers coming in October, I thought we had errors in our data stream. I thought we were looking at different years. I could not believe the change going from September to October. But that month of September was so fantastically warm. The plants responded. They put on our forecast plants went up. Our weight went up. And then going into November, we ended up with close to records on both. But a combination of both plants and weight gave us a huge crop. Turning our attention to Illinois and Indiana. Illinois produced 2 billion bushels of corn with 180 bushels per acre. Indiana was just under a billion bushels with 168 bushels per acre. Those were records as well. What is it, Vermilion County? That's right here someplace, isn't it, here in Illinois? Out on our USDA NAS website, you can go out and see how you did compared to the averages. Because Vermilion County, Illinois, let me see if I can find it here. How do you spell it? It begins with a V, right? It had 167 bushels per acre. Any other counties? Let's see. How about this one? Let's see. Who's close here? What's another county? Vermilion. I know. Indiana, Vermilion. I got to go to a different sheet here. Hang on. I got to find it here. And I should have probably compiled this a little bit better, but this is one of these things where you think, that'd be good to talk about when you had their Indiana Vermilion on corn. Let's see. It was 170.5. Pretty darn good. Any other counties? Edgar in Illinois? Let's see what we got here. Let's see here. If I can spell Edgar, that's after DuPage. Edwards? Edgar. Whoop. 188. Morgan, Illinois? Morgan, somebody's going to have to help me here. Morgan, 200. Piatt, Illinois. Piatt. 191 in Illinois. Douglas. 182. In Indiana? Illinois. Okay, hang on here. Crawford. How do you spell it? Oh, it's right there. 173. Illinois. Is there any Indiana farmers here? Wait. Iroquois. Iroquois. 184. DeWitt. 181. Pretty good. How about my, like I said, Perry County down there on that yellow soil? I think it was 135. In Washington County, which is just north of it, that's a good county. When I was a kid growing up, that's where all my cousins lived. You know, your cousins always lived on better farm ground than you did, you know? They always do. So you go to Washington, it's 155. So, any Indiana guys? Benton. Oh, that should be awesome up there, isn't it? That's in that black dirt. if I can find it here. Benton County begins with a B, right? Yeah, let's see. Oop, there's Boone. That's in a neighborhood here, isn't it? Benton County. Benton, 170.8. White. 175. What? Vigo. V-I-G-O. 172. What's going back over here? What? Warren. Hey, that's you, Susan. That's a plant. 171. Jasper? That's home of Jasper Engines. They sell those motors out by me. They tried to put one in my minivan. 175. Pretty good. Tipton, that's over here. Let's see, where is it? Tipton, 181. Pretty good. Hey, did anybody break any combines? I was at a meeting in Chicago, and one of the guys, like one of these guys, you know, that are producers, he said that combine was making noises he never heard before when he was running that corn through there. I figure most of you guys had to pull back on the hydrostat drive or drop it down in lower drive. You know, just imagine, just think, back in the 60s or so, maybe late 50s, early 60s, when you had that John Deere, say, 730 or 630, that had that 227 picker on there, there's no way it could eat this corn. It's impossible. It just wouldn't happen. So thanks to modern technology, things are happening. Get moving, Joe, right? Okay, let's talk about soybeans a little bit here. I'm going to lose all my notes here. Soybeans. We're on soybeans. Yeah, Illinois had just about a half a billion bushels produced with 50.5 bushels per acre. And Indiana was just almost 300 million bushels produced, 52 bushels per acre. Greg, was that a national record? Indiana producers had the highest soybean yields of anybody in the country. I don't know. Good weather, good practices, record highs in all those, right? What about some soybean yields? Let's see if we can. DeWitt, Illinois? Huh? County DeWitt in Illinois, right? 54. Pretty good. How about in Indiana? Any other in Illinois? Huh? I remember you. Edgar, 56. What? Moultrie. M-O-M-O-M-O-M-O-M-O. Oh, wait a minute. How do you spell that? Oh, yeah, here it is. 55. Champagne. That's close here, isn't it? That's right down the road here. Champagne, 54. Okay, it's blank. Hey, yeah, me too. I just want to tell you something. If you guys think about it, if you have noticed about, as I move on here, as you notice, soybeans have migrated from the southern states to the northern states, North Dakota. Think about those farmers in North Dakota that were scratching out maybe 25 to 30 bushels per acre on wheat and getting, you know, around $3 a bushel for wheat. Now they got them soybeans. They'll grow up there. They got little earmuffs on them or something. I don't know. But they'll grow up there, and they could get $5 to $6 on soybeans for the same yields or better. Well, as one astute marketer said, it doesn't take a PhD in ag economics to say, hey, go from wheat to soybeans. And soybeans that grow up there. That's your competition. Not necessarily Brazil. It's the guys up north. Do you know what the number one soybean-producing county in the nation is? Huh? Is it in Illinois? Nope. Is it in Indiana? Nope. It's in North Dakota. Cass County, North Dakota, produces more soybeans in a county than anywhere else in the United States. Go figure. It's a pretty good-sized county. There's not too many people in North Dakota either. Cass County is used to be a big potato growing region. It's along the Red River Valley. It's black dirt like we've got here. It's pretty good soil. Hey, what about 2005, guys? Ladies too. I'm sorry, folks. 2005. Let's think about 2005. These are some things that I was just impacting you as producers. What's diesel doing? going up. I came here and I was driving down the freeway and just on the down the road here, it was like over like 215, 220 or something for diesel fuel. I mean, that's got to cut into something. This is U.S. diesel prices since January of 2003. Look what it's done. These numbers come from what's called the Energy Information Administration. It's part of the Department of Energy. This information is available to everyone. What about propane? I know, you know, why do you have propane on there? Well, drying costs last fall. Look at that. Okay. What about natural gas? Why is this a concern for you guys? Anhydrous. This it says ammonia, but it's anhydrous ammonia. This is, look what anhydrous ammonia is doing since last year. Okay, impacts. What about prices? Okay, this is, what's this, corn? And it's kind of tapering off. What about soybeans? A big drop, right? Things that's going into your minds as you're putting plans together for this year. USDA just put out, that's us, different agency, but still part of USDA, part of the same family. It's like one of your cousins doing something, right? USDA had forecast record farm income for farmers in 2004 and close to record for 2005. Look at the chunk in yellow. You know what that part is? That part is from government payments. Okay? Government payments, all right? This picture shows U.S. budget surpluses and subsidies since 1994. And we've got two different projections going on in here, if I can find my highlighter here. These are projections from Congressional Budget Office. This is out to 2014. You notice the big reds here? That's a September 2004 forecast on budget deficits. And this is a January 05 forecast for budget deficits. This is the new budget that came out, so that's what that was in there. So they're suggesting a surplus back out into the future. Okay, with this graph and this graph showing, okay, record farm income, budget deficits. Should that concern you a little bit? Potentially. It should. I'll tell you a story. It's not as bad as the rice guy's got it. The rice guy's got to pay back 56 cents a hundredweight for 2003 rice crop under countercyclical. So, I mean, it's not corn, not soybeans, but we had a group of producers, and you guys are a lot happier than they were. They were not happy. All right? They went wrong way. Okay, what about 2005? A couple weeks ago, the USDA, I work for USDA, so it must be me, right? Put out some numbers for the 2005 crop year on corn. 82 million planted acres, about 75 million acres harvested. That's up about 1 million acres on both the planted and harvested. 10.9 billion bushels produced with a yield of 145 point, what did I got there, 6? USDA projections, okay? What about soybeans? This soybean gem. 73.0 planted, production 1.8 billion bushels, 40 bushels per acre. Corn forecasted to be up about a million bushels, soybeans down about 2 million bushels. Acres. Up 1 million acres, down 2 million acres on beans. I'm still trying to figure out where the other million acres is. Okay, because there's not enough grain sorghum in the world. Well, they could, I guess, in the United States that could make up the difference, but not around here. So I'm looking at those numbers. Where do those numbers come from? I said USDA, right? Those are official USDA projections. Those do not come from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. They're not based on any surveys. You guys get surveyed from us every once in a while, right? And when we call, you guys say what? Okay, don't tell me what you say, okay? Those numbers or those projections are based upon or derived by committee analysis. Okay. There's a feed grains interagency committee that does corn and an oilseeds interagency committee that does the soybeans. NAS does not participate in those whatsoever. Like I said, no survey numbers are in there. Where are those numbers coming from? Out of the air. Okay, now. Okay, Joe, tell us, why is that important to you? Well, would you rather somebody making some sort of guess about what the crop is, or would you rather tell us what you are going to do? I would hope that you guys would rather tell me, because sometimes these committees get out of control. We are in the midst of the March Agricultural Survey right now. That survey began a couple weeks ago, no, last week. Some of you folks may have already been contacted, have you not? Yes? No? Okay, don't a minute. Okay, that's either way. You may have been contacted. For the March Agricultural Survey, we've got a sample size nationwide of about a little over 83,000 farmer operators. In Illinois, there's 3,200 farm operators in a sample. Indiana has 2,300. And Iowa has a little over 2,600. Here's a question to you. Why do you think the sample sizes are different with Illinois and Iowa and Indiana? I know Indiana has smaller acreages than Illinois and Iowa, but why would Illinois' sample size be bigger? Any thoughts? Huh? Different crops. In Iowa, they do not know what winter wheat is. It's a weed to them. It really is. I mean, there's not much. Iowa is basically corn and soybeans. We have to have bigger samples if you've got different kind of crops. Those guys in southern Illinois, well, that was kind of where I grew up. Actually, you know, Brad, there's one guy down there that's got rice. That's true, because the rice guys told me about it. He's close to the Missouri side. But they've got rice. They've got different commodities in southern Illinois. So you need a larger sample to pick up any sort of variation in the commodities, in the crops growing. We survey farmers and ranchers, such as yourself, about your planting intentions, and your grain stocks inventories. This data, these two reports right here, they go into what's called the principal economic indicators of the United States. Believe it or not, these two right here are in there. Why? Because if you think about it, if the government, the nation, the whole economic activity, we're talking about planting intentions, you guys are buying fuel, fertilizer, seed. That's generating economic activity. That goes into it. And the grain stocks report is important in there, too, because that's the amount of food that's available for the public later on. We make contacts by mail, telephone. Either you'll get a telephone call from our state office or a NAS calling center. We're trying to consolidate to save costs just like anybody else. Or you may get a personal interview. In the March survey, we ask, what do you intend to plant for your various commodities? And then we ask, how much grain do you have in storage, corn, soybeans, wheat, that sort of thing. In addition, this year, rust is a big issue. We are also asking some questions about rust and the impacts on your intention. The first question is basically, did you hear any information about rust? Did you receive any information about rust? Believe it or not, there are people out there that have not heard about rust. Believe it, it's true. Greg, there are some people that have not heard about rust. This question was requested to be put on here by the chief economist of the USDA because there's all this money going into outreach for rust. Is it working or not? Also, we're asking, was this Asian soybean rust an influencing factor in your decisions this year for your intentions? If it was, do you plan to plant more soybeans or less soybeans? And then if you could have some sort of guess if it changed your intentions of any sort. Just to get an idea how we run this survey, data collection starts about February 26th and runs to March 16th. 83,000 farm operators are contacted in that roughly 2.5 week period. We run our edits from March 1 to March 17th for about 2 weeks. Why? Well, sometimes things don't add up right. We transcribe things wrong, but we run the edit, make sure things make sense. We run our summary and analysis in our state offices. They can look. They look at the information from March 18th to March 23rd. After that, the folks in Brad and Greg's offices, they submit their recommendations for what Iowa, Illinois, various states, Indiana, what's going on, make the recommendations to D.C., and then my staff looks at this information for the next week or so, And then, this is sort of a brief Reader's Digest of what's going on. Then on March 31st, there's some chaotic evening sometimes. Then on March 31st at 8:30 in the morning, we released the Prospective Plantings and Grain Stocks Report. I know this is kind of a fuzzy graph, but this is just one of the, if you ever see one of the big NAS, this is what I'm talking about. It's down here on March 31st. NAS has a publication calendar that's available on the website that talks about the various reports that go out. As Dave mentioned, we have a crop report on March, that's on Thursday, which will be going in overnight. It's citrus. It doesn't impact you folks, but it impacts some producers down in Florida. They're vitally interested in what's going on in citrus. Just as we mentioned rust for soybeans, there's a citrus canker going on in Florida. There's producers having to push out groves of oranges. So it's different. Doesn't matter what kind of crop you produce as a farmer, you have issues sometimes, right? Okay, now here I ask you guys a question. What happens to prices when NAS puts out a report? What?
They go down
usually. I like the answer over here I like better. Up or down, yeah. Can you see? You can't see this too good. I kind of got carried away. This is back to 1999 for corn and soybeans. And we have, this is the report goes out at 8:30. So this is, corn is like Iowa number two, central Iowa, some generic Iowa price that we get. And then I think soybeans is central Illinois, I believe on that. But this is the price the day before the report, the day of the report, and then 1 week after the report. Okay, if you look, there's reds and blacks on this graphic. On corn, in this 6 years, there's three up and three down the day after report, three up, three down a week after report. Soybeans, it's not quite 50-50. It's 4-2, I believe, on that. So sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. You know, we're not necessarily the bearer of bad news. Last year, what happened here was there was way more soybeans planted than what was expected. You know, when they talk about the market factoring in things, there was way more beans last year than was anticipated, and the market responded. A few more things, and we'll be out of here because I'm standing between you and a break, right? So that's not a good thing. Did you know when you read about agriculture in the this is the testimonial, the commercial, right? Did you know when you read about agriculture in newspaper, any place, it's usually a NAS number, and those NAS numbers come from you, the producers. Who uses this data? Well, farmers and ranchers, because I think from the last year's intention, I'm pretty sure there were some producers that changed their opinion about soybeans and corn and made some shifts after the report came out. We talk about leveling the playing field. I mention this is because if NAS did not survey the farmers and come publish these reports, who would? Who? Would that be good for you? Huh? Maybe, maybe not. But I have to say, I think it's probably better this way, right? Because it gives the information to everybody at the same time. It gives the farmers a voice. Who else uses this information? Producers, buyers and producers to get an idea of where are the stocks? What's the feasibility of locating new facilities? I got a call from a guy in Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, about 3 months ago. And he was wanting to know about amount of corn supplies that are available in New Jersey. I said, huh? Why are you interested in corn supplies around New Jersey? There's no corn in New Jersey. He said, but Joe, the petrochemical, well, they make gasoline, are located in New Jersey. Wouldn't it make more sense to put an ethanol plant in New Jersey and bring the corn closer than shipping the ethanol to New Jersey? I said, I don't know. That's what you're trying to figure that out. So that's the kind of stuff that we go through. I mean, people are asking these questions all the time. Agribusinesses, fertilizer companies. Anybody belong to GrowMark FS? A co-op? There's a few of you guys, right? Do you know what big cooperative they own? You ever heard of, Josh, I forgot the name now. Post 40, it's gone. Well, they're in Chicago, Wolf Lake, Illinois, big fertilizer company. And they use this information from our different reports to say, should we be moving fertilizer around the country? Because it wouldn't be good if you ran out of fertilizer when you needed it, right? It wouldn't be a good thing. Also, to transportation companies. Every year, generally, there is some sort of congressional debate about, I don't know why poor Union Pacific Railroad always gets a bad rap, but they're always the ones, it seems like they're always having rail car problems. And this information is used, is what's going on with the rail industry and moving grain. U.S. and state legislatures use this information to, you know, farm program impacts. What do we do here? What do we do there? Tobacco programs are completely gone. Now we're scrambling to figure out how do we estimate tobacco in this country. Different things. So there's different people use information all over the place. Other government agencies. Crop insurance, RMA, Risk Management Agency. They're sort of the umbrella for all the crop insurance. I see there's some vendors here. Those county estimates that I was yelling off to you folks, those county estimate yields factor into the RMA policies. So there's some information that is useful to you. The universities and other economic entities, one being the Economic Research Service, uses this information. We've got some projects going on over here with the University of Illinois on various things about corn production and that sort of stuff. They use our information quite a bit. I just want to close with a couple thoughts here. Information from NAS reports comes from the best source possible. It doesn't come from a committee. It doesn't come from somebody looking into a crystal ball. Who does it come from? It comes from you, the producers, okay? It doesn't come from anybody else. We have our NAS website. It's available. There's a picture over here of our NAS website. You can go online and pull all this information out. I want to remember, I grew up on a farm. I have great passion for agriculture. Agriculture counts in this country. Don't let anybody fool you. It does. And NAS counts agriculture. Questions, comments? Yes, over here, sir. Pardon? Those come from producer surveys. What state are you in, Illinois? Yes. About how many county estimate surveys do you send out?
12,000.
About 12,000? Other questions? I know I'm the guy from D.C., so there's no questions, right? What?
Web address.
Let me back up here. You probably can't see it, but it's www.usda.gov/NAS.
It'll be on the WILL homepage.
Yeah, you guys have a link to it, don't you?
If we don't, we will.
Okay. Ma'am? Wait a minute, how am I going to do this? Okay, she asked about, what about the 03 crop? What were you turkeys in D.C. doing, right? Yeah, we missed it, right? I got to get this slide. I hit the button here.
No, you were closer than we were shocked by the number.
Okay.
Because they were more than we expected.
What? No, this was in 03 she's talking about. Wait a minute. I can't see it now. Hang on here. What you're talking? Whoa, that's okay. Up, right here. Okay, 03. You see this right here? We had the plants, but there was no pod weight in 03. We get constantly comments from producers such as yourself. Why don't you guys use satellite imagery rather than contacting us? In 03. From the satellites, which we have some information that comes from satellites, the foliage growth and plant growth was fantastic. It was beautiful. Using that, you would say, hey, man, there's all kinds of soybeans out there. But actually, when we did the actual field counts, there were no beans. And there was no beans. When you look at that yield in 03. Yes? No? Wait, I don't know. Is that okay? Questions? Anything else? Going over here, sir. Yes. Okay. Okay, the question was, Joe, you guys are here to help us from USDA. We got soybean rust out here. How are you folks going to keep soybean rust from bouncing around? Actually, we are looking into that sort of thing. We're exploring the feasibility of bio suits. We're exploring the feasibility of maybe not doing objective yield. I don't know if that would be a good thing. You know, we're looking at a lot of different things. The biggest comment I can say about that is,
my understanding on the soybean rust, and let me just point out that our field enumerators generally just cover one county, and that, yes, they go from field to field in the county, but my understanding is that the spores of this soybean rust are transmitted through the wind, and that a strong wind in one day can do much more damage than any one particular enumerator can in going to, you know, three or four objective yield fields. So I don't think with respect to the soybean rust, now it's a different situation when you're talking about livestock diseases, but the soybean rust is not, I don't think that you need to be concerned about that. If you're going to get the soybean rust, it's going to come airborne much more quickly than it will be transmitted by the enumerators.
The one comment that we've heard is that with the wind patterns, that soybean rust can travel up to 300 miles a day. So, yes, sir. Who's pro? Is that you? No, that's your. No, I don't know. Right, that's a whole different question. I don't know. Anything else? Yes, sir. Oh, yeah, sure. Have any of you had the opportunity to come in to one of our lockup tours? A few of you. Okay. We do invite producer groups to come into our lockup area. During the big crop report starting in August through November, even the smaller ones to some extent, but the big ones for the big crops, corn, soybeans. I have one of my units. I have two units. One deals with field crops, and the other unit deals with fruits, vegetables, especially commodities, and it's sort of like two kids that don't get along. It's like they both, the one says, Joe, you like me more. But when I talk about the big crops, I talk about corn and soybeans. Okay. When the big crops start coming in August, the states do their data collection roughly the same time period. Around the first of the month, we start doing our farmer surveys around August 1 to about August 10th, 7th, something like that. And we do our field work from about July 23rd, 24th through about the 3rd or 4th of August. That data is then sent to our state offices, Greg and Brad's offices, and the information is processed and summaries are generated. Okay. While the summaries are generated, our people in D.C., the guys that work for me and ladies, they can look at what the summary says. They can look at what the summary output is. Brad and Greg's offices, they are looking at the information at the same time. They make recommendations and provide comments for what the yield will be in Illinois, Indiana, Missouri, the various states. Okay? That information is encrypted, means coded, right? And it's shipped to D.C., and I don't see it. Okay, the crop report in August comes out around the 10th, 11th, or 12th. I think it's on the 12th this year of August. We will go in about 10:30 the night before the crop report. So we're working like second shift. My dad worked in the post office from midnight till like 8:30 in the morning and farm too, so I know what he was feeling. It's like some things are just crazy that time of the night. Okay, so we go in and we're locked into the building. The doors are closed, the shades are pulled, sealed, the phone lines are cut off, the computer lines are cut off, and once we get the all clear signal from our security people, then we pull in the recommendations from the state offices. We go through the process and decrypt them, and then we start looking at their recommendations at that time. And that's, you know, 11 o'clock at night. And we will work through till about 4 in the morning getting everything set up. Nobody can get in unless you've got, I got a little card here someplace that says I can get in, and you can't get out. It's sort of like the Roche Motel. If you go in, you can't get out. Okay. So we work on that information, and we put a report together overnight. And then about, say, 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, the media is, there's media guys here, they're fleeced down, they're checked, they're searched, and they're led into the media room. They have no cell phones, nothing. They're on secure computers that they have no contact to the outside world, and we provide them with the information what's in the report. That way they can start working up their news reports. Okay. About 8 o'clock or so, 8:10, we start getting ready for the Secretary of Agriculture or their representative. Jim Mosley did a whole bunch of reports with me last year. About 8:15 or so, 8:10, 8:15, the Secretary shows up. We're still in lockup, and we brief the Secretary. Actually, first, the Secretary, as I mentioned, signs the report, and then we brief the Secretary. Okay. And then we go through all that, and I'm going to tell you something. When we showed that big corn crop in October, you know, that big jump, you should. Keith Collins is the chief economist of the United States. If anybody ever gets a chance to meet Keith Collins, there's one sharp guy. It's like that brain was cooking. He turned to the Secretary and says, oh, my God, potential government payments could skyrocket. You know, that's what he's just thinking about things like that. And so we go through that at 8:30 in the morning. The report is released to the public, it goes to the internet, and it's released to everybody. If the report doesn't get there, I'm serious, if it's not there like about 8:33, the phone starts ringing. I mean, every once in a while you have a glitch someplace, and I tell you, then people are calling, the secretaries are all twerked off because people are calling in. Not the secretary, but the secretaries, you know, the ones that pay the bills and stuff for us. You know, they do our travel, and they can extract revenge on you. So then that information is reported. But the lockup area is very secure. We have cell phone sniffers. You know, it's locked down. And from there, is that okay? Where was that? Hey, if you have a heart attack, fortunately we haven't had the opportunity to experience that yet. But we do have procedures in place that if someone has a, say, life-threatening condition, and they need to go to the hospital, there's guards outside of the lockup area, and someone from inside the lockup area has to escort the person with the ambulance and the guard. You know, sort of like the CIA thing. If they talk, you tape their mouth shut. Sort of. They go with them so that they don't disclose anything. I mean, we have procedures for that.
All right, we've come to the end of our time. Joe Persaki, National Agricultural Statistics Service. And Joe, I listened carefully throughout your entire presentation, and I got a hint from you about what to do on the futures market.
What?
Buy Bruce Weber futures. Joe Persaki, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And if you go ahead and bring the